Attention musicians of all levels. It's not always easy picking out a song by ear. Sometimes you need a little help. Well, I have the app for you. Whether you're a professional musician or a beginner, Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app. For just $2.99, you get the chords and tabs on guitar, bass, or ukulele for over a million songs. They're all available at your fingertips. You also get tools like a tuner, metronome, chord library, lessons, videos, and more. You can find out any song you want. It also has like transpose button. It has auto scroll that you can change the speed to so you can play along with the song. A lot of the songs have the lyrics there so you can sing along with them. Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app. Just go to ultimateguitar.com or download the app to your phone today and start playing. Start playing any song you want. Ultimate Guitar, that's the place for you. Let's get down.
Did I get here? And now here is your host, John Howdy.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show, the last show of 2021. Wow, this is it. That was a whole year, and it's gone. It's New Year's Eve. Maybe you have some plans tonight. Maybe your plans have been thwarted by this Omicron variant. I do have plans tonight. I'm playing with Skyrocket at the Astorian in Houston, Texas. Should be interesting. It's weird. I you know, in some ways, 2021, there was a lot of good stuff and a lot of weird stuff and a lot of bad stuff. It's very definitely a very tumultuous year for all of us as a society. But then also people went through individual things like, you know, let's see, some of the highlights. I quit smoking when I got COVID. As a breakthrough case after I was vaccinated. I got Rosie. I was in a relationship with somebody who I was very deeply in love with and thought I was going to spend the rest of my life with, so much so that we got a dog together. And then she didn't want the dog and she didn't want me. So now I got Rosie. That's definitely one of the highlights of my whole life. Got a new car the other day. That was great. I mean, it's not brand new, but it's new to me. Used car. What else? I put out some music this year. That was pretty cool. Even a couple of tunes I did with my friend Gabriel Rhodes. Put together a cool band. Did a cool show at 310. Had Harmony Kelly, John Chipman, Alex Chod on keyboards, Gabriel Rhodes on guitar. It was a great, great band. Great time. Great songs. It was fun putting out those songs and doing that stuff. I hope to be putting out some more music this year. That's what I'm hoping. 2022, like we approach all these years with like, with so much optimism. Like, oh, this year. Okay, well, this year, it's not going to be like last year. But sometimes it isn't like last year. It's even weirder. But hopefully we can all get it together, right? We can all look at this world and be like, all right, let's try to get along. Let's try and see what it is that we're all actually trying to get out of life. And we probably have a lot more in common than we don't. You know what I mean? Like whenever you really talk to somebody that doesn't have their walls up or their, you know, political thing up, you know, Democrats and Republicans, they both do it. Like, oh, don't talk to me if you're talking about that. But like people that just talk about like, hey, their basic needs without calling someone a racist or calling someone a communist or whatever the fuck these people are doing. Like when you talk about it, it turns out we all kind of want the same thing. We all want to live in a world we can live in. Now, are we all going about it the same way? No, not at all. But there's got to be a way. You know, maybe 2022 is the year that we have breakthrough in communication and actually start solving problems and not just throwing stones at each other. That would be great. That would be really great. I love that Rosie, man. She's just sitting on the couch staring at me. Gang, 2021, I learned about Guayaquil Organic Yerba Mate. And I'm having one right now. I'm having the Sparkling Classic Gold. It comes in a 12-ounce can, only has 100 calories. Gives you a pretty good kick. Like, you know, these yerba mate gives you energy. Not like the crazy five-hour energy drink where you freak out for 5 hours and then you crash really hard. This just kind of keeps you going, man. You know it. It's in the yellow can, 7-Eleven, wherever it is you get your energy drinks. They brought me five cases. a couple weeks ago, and I've been loving it. Loving it. I love this stuff, man. Can't wait for my next shipment. This classic, sparkling classic gold is carbonated. They're not all carbonated. There's blueberry. There's enlightenment. There's a tropical one. There's a grapefruit one. But this one is, the classic gold is like a cola. And it's really good. And it's sparkling. It has that little bubble thing you need. And gives you that kick you need without the crash. So Guayaki Organic Yerba Mate. Find it wherever it is your energy drinks are. It's in a yellow can. It's got some orange on it. It's a very good can. Good, good can. Want to thank Craig and the gang over at Guayaki Organic Yerba Mate for sliding me these. So 2022. Well, playing tonight. Did I tell you guys that we're playing tonight at the Astorian Skyrocket is in Houston? Hope it's a good show. There might be still some tickets left. I know that they released 100 general admission tickets this week. They put out 100 more. So go to skyrockettheband.com, look at our tour dates, and find out. I hope that all of you have a great 2022. I hope that you're all in a good place. I hope I'm in a good place. I hope, you know, I feel like I've been learning about myself the last couple of months since this breakup. You know, getting back into the therapy, talking to someone on a regular basis, trying to get to the bottom of what it is that I want out of life and what I can do to make the world around me better, you know? So that's what I'm learning. And I love that rosy girl. I know I talk about it a lot, don't I? Ah, 2021, what a year. Quit smoking, ended up with Rosie. Podcast turned 10 years old. Can you believe it's over 10 years old? This is episode 1,125. And I have a great show for you guys today. Andy Baxter and Kyle Jenks from Penny and Sparrow are my guests. Now, this is a band that started, these guys met at University of Texas, started playing around, garnered a huge following, turned this thing into, they didn't realize they were gonna be, you know, professional musicians out there playing. It just kind of fell on their lap from their hard work, and their fan base really connected with them, started following them around. They've released quite a few records. This record, Live in Texas from 2019, is absolutely fantastic. They have this EP called Need You, which just came out in November. It's fantastic, but they have a new LP coming out on January 21st, 2022. It's called Ollie Ollie, based on the Ollie Ollie Oxenfree, calling out everyone from hiding to reveal their true selves. Right? Cool, guys. We have a great conversation. It's actually done over Zoom. These guys actually don't live here. They live in different places. I can't even remember exactly where they were. Andy was somewhere and Kyle was somewhere else. Anyway, we have a really, really great conversation about kind of their journey through music and just kind of like just about music in general and just kind of ourselves and kind of like trading great stories. It was a very, very good conversation. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Andy and Kyle from the band Penny and Sparrow. Let's get down.
My head aligned, I'm on the road, feeling simplified, missing those pheromones. Optional clothes, send me a sign, call and tell them a fine joke.
Why are you in Northwest Alabama?
Kyle and I moved here a few years ago to work on a record and to record. And then my wife and I fell in love with this city and the people and with the ability to afford a home here. And so we bought our first house a few years ago, and we stuck around because we fell in love with it.
That's awesome. Does that make it, how does it make your working relationship? Like, do you guys write together?
Yes, we do. And we have, because we offer so different a thing than one another for the music portion of our job, it is easy to be in separate places to do our thing because of how much it's like truly a symbiotic relationship. Kyle being predominantly the melody person, me being predominantly the lyrics person.
Oh yeah. Like the top in Elton John.
Indeed.
Separate rooms.
Indeed.
Yeah. How long have you lived there in Alabama?
I guess going on 6.5 years now.
Wow. And Kyle,
Kyle,
you've been in Austin and Waco during that time?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I was there, I think, like 2 years. I was in Florence with Andy, in and out of touring, and then moved right back to Austin after that. So that's, yeah, I would say how long have I been in Waco? 2.5 years now. And then hopefully we'll be back in Austin in like another year.
Are you guys planning a big tour for 2022 with the release of Ollie Ollie?
Yes.
Yeah, we are.
Were you pretty big?
I know.
I hate Zoom, man.
Zoom is tough.
We'd be having such a good time here at my place right now.
Yeah.
I know.
We're having a great time right now.
Oh, you are?
It just has a couple.
I'm just fucking confused.
Amazing.
So you are planning a big tour. Is it booked? Like, is there a...
Yeah, it's all booked out. It's been announced. It's going to be it'll be March, April, and May. And we're excited to go back out.
Do you guys do much in Europe?
This will be our first time ever having been there to play music, that is.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you?
I am thrilled about it and nervous.
Yeah? What are you nervous about?
Yeah.
COVID, people not coming?
I mean, all the normal shit. There's about 1,500 things to be nervous about.
Yeah.
Those are the main two. Mostly just wanting the world to be in an okay enough state to be able to sing for folks there and not feel like a dick for having endangered folks.
Yeah.
And number two, hoping beyond hope that any humans whatsoever in Belgium will show up to hear us sing stuff.
Yeah.
So it's just that stuff. Just the norm.
Are you playing
Brussels?
We're
trying to get huge in Belgium.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't think we're playing Belgium.
Oh. Wait, are we not? I thought we were.
I don't think so.
I have a really good friend that lives there. I would tell her to go. She loves music. That's my dog, Rosie. She has a lot to say on the show. Okay, so...
Hey, Rosie.
Hi, Rosie.
So you guys have this record, Ollie Ollie. The Need You is kind of in the form of an EP.
Like, yeah.
It's...
Yeah, we released 4 singles kind of... with like all one after the other 3 weeks apart, and we stopped releasing them, so now it kind of looks like an EP, kind of in like its own little package deal.
Yeah,
it's fun.
That's really cool. And so this record, you guys recorded it during, you wrote it and recorded it during the pandemic era.
True.
Right.
And yeah. I guess we'd started some of these songs, Kyle. You're melodic ideas for some of these were pre-existing 2019, 2018. So,
yeah. Now that we've been around long enough, I feel like you and I both just kind of log things. Like you add in some words that you eventually want to use or things that really fire you up. And I've got just a lot of voice memos of melodies that like, I know eventually will get worked on, but because of that, yeah, some of them go back. I think some went back to like 2017.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So where did you record the album?
We recorded some of it in my guest bedroom, uh-huh. Some of it in Andy's living room.
Together?
The living in Andy's living room, yes. In okay. my guest bedroom, I was just tracking guitar.
Okay.
And it's mainly just our friends' bedrooms.
Yeah.
It's where most of the record came from. Yeah.
Is that different than the records you've made before? Were you used to going into studios and doing stuff?
I don't think we've ever recorded, other than Let a Lover Drown You, that was in a house converted to a studio. We've never done like an official, we go into a studio
right,
to record.
Right.
So this is sort of in line with how we've done it before. I think it was just a little bit more piecemealed apart based on COVID and where we were in life.
Yeah.
So we just kind of made do, and it was actually a ton of fun to do it this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if we'll do it again because I like being in the same room as Andy.
Yeah.
But it was a cool little change for a record.
Do you guys write for anyone else or anything like that?
Well, sir.
No? For some reason, no, I had this idea that you guys might do that.
We've toyed with the idea of eventually doing that someday. Eventually, when we start our illustrious country songwriting career.
Yeah, mainly Brooks and Dunn and Florida Georgia Line. And
there's only 50% of that that's a joke. I would immediately jump on Kix Brooks and Ronnie Dunn's payroll.
Absolutely.
Country songs for them instantaneously. It'd be so much fun.
Yeah. Did you guys grow up Kyle, where are you from? Like, where were you born and what's your story? What's your origin story?
We're both from my origin story. Well, I was born in Dallas, Texas.
Okay.
Lived in the Lake Highlands neighborhood. And, I don't have much else. My very boring origin story. That's pretty much it.
Do you come from a big family or a small family, or what was your?
I had an older sister and a younger brother.
Uh huh.
We were a sports family. Did a lot of sports growing up. Then not a lot of music playing. My dad loved listening to music.
What was he listening to?
Beatles.
Yeah.
Led Zeppelin. What's the name of the radio station, Andy? The 92.5
KZPS.
That's what it is. Yeah. Classic rock station in Dallas. And then on the other side, a lot of Willie Nelson and George Strait, Brooks and Dunn. So I have like classic rock and then like 90s country.
How did you connect with music where you were like, you know, I want to make this, you know, I want to do it.
Honestly, it's hilarious. But the two main reasons, because I was what? I think I was like in seventh grade, sixth grade, when I was like, wow, I really like, I'm interested in music. I want to start learning how to play drums.
Yeah.
I listened to, first, I think was the Goofy movie came out. And in the Goofy movie, there was an artist I don't remember anymore, but I remember being like, that looks badass to play on stage.
Oh yeah.
Sounds so fun. And then Hanson's Mbop came out and I was like, that's it. I can't do it any longer. I got to get a drum set. And,
Cause wasn't the drums. Littlest guy, the littlest Hanson, the drummer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like my age. And I was like, I want to do that. He can do it. And here I am.
I know that guy, Taylor, the older guy. The older guy, the middle guy, the singer guy. Yeah, yeah.
The singer guy?
Yeah.
The piano player?
Yeah, he works. He's done a lot of work with a couple of friends of mine, and I've ended up hanging out with them out here.
Oh, that's so fun. I was obsessed with them.
Yeah.
When I was in elementary school, whenever they first came out.
So you got the drum set?
Got the drum set. It was a Premiere. I think that's the name of it. No, Percussion Plus. I don't know. I think it was just like a toy drum set.
Okay, because a Premiere is like a real drum set, but like a...
Yeah, no, like it wasn't a Premiere.
Percussion Plus sounds a little dubious.
Yeah. That's definitely like Walmart brand.
Yeah, yeah.
Mom was like, if you want to play drums, you can save up your own money.
Yeah.
So it took a minute, and I don't blame her for it. And I think from then on, I think I played just drums until college, and then drums got too loud.
Yeah.
So I had to switch to something else.
You switched to guitar?
Switched to guitar. Tried to. Still trying.
Still trying. And so you didn't play out. Did you have a garage band or were you in a band?
Oh yeah. I played drums in a band in high school. It was a punk band because at the time, bands such as Sum 41 and Blink 182 were around.
Right.
So I made a band with my best friends in high school called Shibby 46. Because you had to have some numbers in it.
Yeah, yeah. I love people's first band names too.
Yeah.
Shibby 46. Can you imagine if like you would have taken off and been like the Beatles or something and like you're stuck with that Shibby 46 name?
Yeah. I think 46 was all of our ages combined.
Oh, okay. That's pretty smart. So,
it is something. But
where did you play? What kind of things were you playing of like people's living rooms or some shit?
We played at the Door in the Next Door down in Deep Ellum.
That's cool.
To like crowds of 10, crowds of our parents.
Yeah.
Just super great.
What about your dad? Was he like, yeah, man, he's doing it.
My parents loved that I played music. Yeah. Both of them. I've apologized so many times in my adulthood about how annoying being in a band must have been for them. Cause we were just loud all the time. We were just playing drums all the time in the house. And they've been so sweet about it. I still feel bad today. And I don't know if I believe them, but they say that it was a lot of fun that I was in a band. So hopefully they mean that.
Yeah. What about you, Andy? Where are you from?
I grew up not far away from Kyle. We both grew up in the Metroplex, so he's Dallas and I was Fort Worth.
Nice.
A little place called North Richland Hills. And like him, I'm a middle kid. And like him, we had a really musical house. Everybody listened to music. Everybody listened to different stuff. Older sister, younger sister, mom and dad. It was a pretty big spectrum. And the family was big, and we always got together on Saturdays and Sundays and hung out. And so a whole bunch of music getting played, people in the kitchen, sports on, shit like that, pretty constant. For my mom, it was country music and pop radio. For my dad, it was KZPS, classic rock, where he would constantly make me guess if it was Foghat or Foreigner or CCR.
Absolutely.
So a lot of that. And with my grandmother, it was Andrew Lloyd Webber and church music. And I'm grateful for all of those weird ass crockpot ingredients that went into making whatever the heck it is we do now.
What Andrew Lloyd Webber did you get into?
Originally, it was the Phantom. I mean, Phantom was right away. And so, like, I cut my teeth listening and trying to mimic Michael Crawford. And, and just, like, had, like, the hugest crush on Sarah Brightman. Like, the only kid I knew who knew those names at the time for many years.
That could get you beat up at school in Fort Worth, like knowing the singers on Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably could have in that era, but I was a daywalker, man. I was a true social chameleon. And so I knew this is not a good thing looking back on it, but I shifted skin pretty quick depending on who I was around.
What did that come from? Like some instinct of survival?
Oh, yeah. I think if my therapist is to be believed, which I think he is, I think it probably comes from a pretty sturdy upbringing, being slightly portly and then needing to or feeling the need to make you like me. And so a lot of that going on, a lot of that. But music was always around growing up in one way, shape, form, or fashion. It was always there.
Isn't that interesting that guys like, I'm also a musician, like a lifelong musician, and, you know, I've known musicians this whole time, and I've done, you know, over 1,100 episodes of this show, and it's the funniest thing that the most fucked up, most awkward, most frightened of people can end up being the focal point of everyone's gaze in a room. Like, that's the only place we're actually comfortable. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's so weird.
Yeah. I haven't quite put my finger on the why of some of that. I mean, sure, I can like surface level make sense of, you know, the chameleon's need to be accepted and liked and to control a social room because then they know where they stand.
Right.
Like I can make sense of that to a certain extent, but how the fuck people like us ended up with such front-facing jobs?
I know
is a bit strange. It seems like we would have tried to carve out a life that was more in our control and less like arguably you could look at the worst days of my life when I have, when in here, the worst day.
Right. Right.
And all of a sudden I'm in front of X number of people and it's a brand new crop of humans that I have to impress.
Yeah.
And that's, if your head's not screwed on straight, then that can be a terrible recipe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, do you wrestle with stage fright at all ever? Like, do you have bouts of like, it comes sometimes where you're like, oh shit. Like that imposter thing.
Yeah. The first 20 seconds, of every single show I've ever done, I sing off the mic just to make sure that I can still make noise and it comes out correctly. So Kyle will play, like, I don't think that I could do a dead start song. I don't think we've ever begun with a dead start song. Even when we do that, I'm singing off the mic for just a second while I figure out to make sure the mechanism still works. And then once I sing for about 15 seconds, I remember how to throw a fastball and we're okay.
Right, right. It's, I love being an artist. I just love that. Like, we all have this like this shitty, weird view of ourselves. Like, yeah. You do this thing your whole life and people are paying to come see you do it. And you're going up to sing. You're the fucking singer and you don't even know if you can do it before you can do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's it's hilarious. It's just hilarious. I mean, I have that too. You know, like we all have that. And you see this kind of thing. I was just talking to Kathy Valentine from the Go-Go's and she was talking about they had just gotten inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and still like walking out onto that stage. She's just like, why the fuck is anyone like me? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Yes. I do know what she means.
Yeah.
I very much get that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, did you start playing music? Did like someone tell you like, hey, we'll get you a guitar? Were you like, hey, I need a guitar? Or
my parents got me one. And I didn't play. It was an electric guitar. It was an Ibanez, and I didn't play it very much because I didn't have anybody really showing me anything.
Oh.
And so I kept that in the closet for a while, and I just spent most of my childhood mimicking, like laying on my stomach, listening to CDs and trying to do what they could do.
Yeah.
And so a shit ton of time was spent just trying to mimic. And that was like all over the map, whether it be, Boyz II Men, Mariah Carey style pop in that era, Take Six. I was big into the R&B world, like Babyface. I would try and do all the runs that they could do. And so I'd mess around with that a whole bunch. And then there was Dave Matthews, and I kept trying to do all the weird shit that he would pop in and out of falsetto and doing.
Hing dong, bing dong, and don't tear me.
Yes.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Yes, you nailed it.
Yeah.
And so I just did a lot of that until eventually my uncle showed me some things on guitar, and then I started trying to write my own stuff in late high school, but none of it ever in my wildest dreams was, I wasn't trying to make it or to start a band. I was just trying to be, I like to sing and I like to sing in front of people because it was like this nice serotonin dump that made me feel good.
Yeah.
But never did I think that was going to translate into a job.
Right. What about now? Does it still shock you?
Yes. Because the idea of like, some people wonder whether or not they have the chops to quote unquote make it.
Right.
And I just knew that I didn't. Like in my head, it was just like, no, of course I don't. I mean, I enjoyed trying to mimic all these people when I got better and I could do some of the runs and I could hold notes as long as, you know, X, Y, or Z person. And sometimes it would sound similar, but I couldn't do everything that they could do. And therefore I chalked that up to math. Which just meant if you can't do what the pros can do, then you don't get to go play in the majors.
I wish there was a lot more people that realized that. So you went, you guys met at UT. You both went there. Kyle, what was your major? What were you going to school for?
I was pre-med biology.
Wow.
Yeah. took a pretty deep left turn in the music afterwards.
What about you, Andy?
I started out pre-med biology, and I quickly figured out that that was bullshit for me, and I went to film and history.
What was your? What were you going to say, Kyle, before I interrupted you?
Oh, that I pursued the idea of I went and got like my master's degree in public health and epidemiology, and thought I was going to go down that route, and then wish I would have caught on early like Andy.
Dude, have your friends been calling you for like the last year and a half?
I wish they would call more, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of them telling me, well, I did see this thing.
Oh, God.
And it'd be wrong.
You're kidding me. Like, and yeah, it's probably like someone that never even was in biology or anything.
I mean, everybody who is bringing up this stuff is, they're, it's so tough because they're all so smart. So it's not like I'm, like, think that they're wrong for thinking what they're thinking. And a lot of it's like right. But the stuff that's not, and when I'm not heard in an argument about a thing that I studied, it's just like a, it's a little bit frustrating. Yeah. But here we are. It's yeah. Okay. We're making it through. We're on almost in year three of COVID.
Yeah. Yeah, we are. That's weird. Okay, so so you guys, how did you meet at UT?
So, I wish, that'd be great. Andy asked me a question about genes, about DNA.
Yeah, how I can get in yours.
That's how it started. we actually met Andy's girlfriend at the time, now wife, Sarah Raina, was one of my best friends. And Andy, I think his lease was finishing up at where he was currently living, and she came and asked if he could move in with me. And I lived in a house with, I think at the time there were 10 guys. I think we were like two to a room at least, and we had an open door policy, so we said absolutely. And sight unseen, he just moved in.
How did you guys connect musically? Like, hey, let's do a thing.
It was like, heard a lot of songs.
Pretty immediate banter and chemistry off the top. And then both of us were interested in music. I was at the time learning guitar. And so it worked out really well. We would just sit in our room kind of choosing a song to cover that both of us liked and trying to. And that's really how it started. Then we just started getting asked to play at our friends' fundraisers. You know, in college, you or like random events, collegiate events that they have to throw.
Right, right.
So we were the free help, and we didn't mind it at all because it's us getting to play live, which was always fun, and few and far between. So we'd get up there and we'd call ourselves like sports names. We'd call ourselves like the Dallas Cowboys because we're not official. We'd be like, hey, we're the Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
We're,
yeah.
Whatever, and just kind of kept snowballing to every rung up the way until you get to where we're at now.
So, all right, well, let's cover a little bit of those rungs. Like, where was like the first,
absolutely,
the first like venue you played here in Austin?
Where was the first?
I think we played Carousel Lounge first.
Oh, okay, right. Cool. Yeah. That's a good place to get started.
Yeah.
Yeah. We played Carousel Lounge. I think I can go rung by rung. Kyle, tell me if I miss one.
Yeah.
Carousel Lounge in front of the papier-mâché elephant.
Yeah.
Yep.
Then Lambert's Upstairs Barbecue.
Nice.
Yeah. Then opening for David Ramirez at Skinny's Ballroom.
Dude.
Yep.
So that's your third gig then, was opening for Ramirez at Skinny's Ballroom.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Fuck, that's great.
Opening for him. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a getting a chance taken on us. Well, and then from there, I think we go ahead.
Sorry, did you guys like you started when you first started making your music together, like writing songs? Did it come out somewhat like what we hear now, at least just songwriting wise? Like, was it good?
Oh yeah. A good. I mean, the first songs that we wrote were our EP. We rarely trash a song. I think that like one thing that's kind of fun is, these were some of the first songs. These are definitely the first songs I wrote on guitar, and up there for Andy, like first, probably like one of the top songs, first songs he's written, right, Andy?
Yeah, other than really crummy bull riding stories that I never actually experienced but wrote about in high school and in college.
Which we'll eventually release
on
a future album. But yeah, so we, the first three songs we released was our first EP, or first songs we wrote were the first songs we ever put out.
What year did they come out?
2011.
Okay. So 10 years ago.
Yeah. Wild.
And so then things just kind of started picking up from there. Like,
we did the Kickstarter Boogie when it was still brand new. We had this first EP that came out. We were proud of it, but to be honest with you, the entire goal of making that thing was just to have something that we could look back on as ephemera, like this nostalgic piece to say, hey kids, you know, your old man was in band one time.
Right.
And then we had such a fun time writing together. We're like, what if we wrote a whole album? Like, what if we tried this again, never thinking it was going to be for a job, but just for the sake of like having fun shit to work on and write and do. And so our community backed the hell out of us, and we got a whole bunch of backers to put a little bit of money in and some to put a lot in. And we had enough to make Ten Boom, which is our first full length that came out in 2013.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, man. It's wild to know, like, because we had day jobs the entire time. By the time Ten Boom came out and people were starting to listen to us that weren't related to us or our buddies from college.
Right.
We had this weird thing happen where we just kept using any money we would make from music, be it from people buying it on iTunes. Remember when that was a thing?
Yeah.
Or from coming to shows.
Right.
We would just immediately put it back into this bank account. And then all of a sudden we blinked and realized that we had enough money to fully fund ourselves for a third album.
That was awesome.
All of these rungs, somebody told us, Kyle mentioned it earlier in passing, but a friend of ours in town was like, hey man, I don't know how you'll take this, but just so you know, you're the only band I've ever known personally that has touched every single fucking rung of the ladder on their way up. And it's felt like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm more meaning like, even as I go back down this, it's not a meh. It's more like a bit of being baffled. Like when I look back at this, like when I say 10 years, I'm like, Jesus, not only do I not feel old, but I still feel new in this world of doing music full time. I think probably because until like the fourth full length album, I didn't feel like a pro at my own damn job.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So it still feels like, holy shit, I'm just like, we're better at our job than we've ever been now. And I'm so pumped to be able to say that and to actually fucking believe it.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
But that confidence is still like new wings. Like I'm still like pumped just to get to fly. Let alone do I know the intricate abilities that these tools that I have on my back can do yet. Like I still feel like Bambi on ice as it pertains to walking in confidence with this career.
Wow. Well, at least you're humble. You know,
I don't know. Whether it sounds like bullshit or not, it just is what it is. Like this has been a hard fought battle against insecurity for more than a decade. And I'm fucking so pumped to be on any degree of, how to say it. The fact that I'm able to walk in any degree and Kyle's able to walk in any degree of like, yeah, we're pretty fucking good at this job is so fun and so much more fun than the other side of the coin was.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Like you feel like you're one of the guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like I'm not only in the room where it happened, we get to invite people into it. That's cool.
Yeah. So before, like in 2019, were you guys touring and doing the whole thing? How many days a year were you guys touring in like 2019?
2019, we released our album Finch. So we did a pretty big run that fall, right before stuff closed up.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I think in 2019, what do you think, Andy? Like at least a quarter of the year gone?
Yeah, I would say somewhere north of 50 shows we would do at that point. And that was probably less than other years.
Okay.
Just because by the time Finch came around, we were able to be a bit more picky and choosy with what we wanted to do and where we wanted to do it and how long we wanted to be away from home.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself is an absurd statement to get to make, but I'm grateful for it.
Yeah.
But I would say by 2019, we were doing somewhere between 50 and 75 shows that year.
Wow. So when COVID hit, what were you guys like? What were you, obviously you wrote this record and recorded it, but like, were you live streaming? Were you, what else were you doing?
Oh, we tried it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at the beginning, it was literally just it wasn't a scramble. Like there wasn't fear yet. It was more like, all right, this is what this is. This is the state of affairs. So what do we do in this time? And one of the things that we did right away and has remained the continued ethic for us since the dawn of Penny and Sparrow has been just make stuff.
Yeah.
Like we never stopped making stuff.
Good.
And so that was normal. And we were doing that the whole time. But we experimented a shit ton with random stuff, like whether it be Instagram Live or a fully live streamed show, or we recorded a Christmas show and we edited it into like a short, really trippy, psychedelic, fucked up Christmas special, and we released that out there. We got to write a whole bunch, record a whole bunch, some singles, some covers, started working on this record, started working on the two other records that are in utero right now. I mean, we just never stopped trying to do stuff because it feels like, I don't know, don't stop swimming, just keep moving.
Yeah. Yeah. The sharks know what to do, man.
Yeah, man, don't die.
Nah, yeah, don't die. Don't die. When you guys do this tour next year, are you doing any shows this year at all? Before?
We're not.
No. Okay. So when you guys do shows next year, it's you go out with a full band.
Okay. No, it'll just be me and Andy.
Just you two? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how we've always toured with just us two. We try to just present. I think that it's just something unique that we offer is just showing up on stage and just being me and Andy, and it's still hopefully feeling full. That's kind of the goal. And it's so different than what you hear in the recorded version that I think it's a fun little change.
Yeah. Do you guys have a manager?
Yeah, we do. Paul Steele.
Does a manager ever say like, you know, hey man, try and make that sound match. Does anyone ever give you that kind of shit? Cause I've gotten that before. I've done like, you know, I do like regular band sounding records, but then I can't afford to take a whole band on this tour. So I'm going to go by myself. And then people you work with are like, dude, you know,
I think that our management team backs us really, really well.
That's
and they
great.
Figured out pretty early on. They figured out pretty early on that we were going to make what we wanted to make, or we weren't going to make anything at all. And
right.
So when they suggest things, they recognize like, hey, guys, just throwing this out here.
Yeah, yeah.
you do what you want with it.
Yeah.
But they're also like realists in a really cool way. We're like, okay, eventually later on this year or early next year, we're going to film a live band thing and send it out to festivals because it sounds like it would be fun to get a bunch of our buddies together and do that.
Yeah.
And management's tickled pink about it. But in the same breath, they knew that that was going to come at our leisure, like when we wanted to do it, when we got fired up about the idea.
Right.
And we view the live band ideas like, hey, this is just another flavor of stuff that Kyle and I want to do.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you guys, your connection's pretty tight as friends and everything. Like, even though you're not living in the same place, you guys are still. I just watched that whole Beatles thing, and all that did was remind me of a built up resentment in relationships with band members. And then that awkward thing that you watch 9 hours of, like these poor guys, yeah. like trying to figure out what the fuck they're doing, and they just can't stand this fucking guy anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Kyle, how would you describe our friendship, buddy?
Just deep-rooted enemies at this point.
Yeah.
No, we're like, probably Andy's the closest friend that I think that I don't think it's possible to have a closer friend than Andy in my life.
That's beautiful.
And I am super, especially this past 2 years when I don't see him a lot and needed a close friend. He's been there, and I am thankful that it's developed as deep as it has, because it just has so much weight in my life. And so outside of music, he's my best friend. And then inside of music, it's like, I feel like we have our own language. And some of the stuff that I was seeing actually oh my God, I can't do it. I was going to compare myself to Paul McCartney and John Lennon.
No,
with you,
do it.
I'm not going to do it.
I've been doing it for the last week. It's okay.
there were just times when I was like, oh, that reminds, like the way that they would banter, the way that they would look at each other.
How they would
interact while they're playing music and like almost feed off each other's energy, and try to make each other either impressed or laugh.
Right.
Throughout the whole thing, those were things that I was like, oh, that is me and Andy do that all the time. It was actually like really, it was really cool to see.
Yeah. There was a thing that made me laugh and then just like literally just start weeping was when they sang the two of us with their clenched teeth.
Oh my gosh.
Like that.
So
and the
great.
Longer it went on, the more emotional I got, just because that you never really see, only people that love each other that much can sit there and do that in each other's faces. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And it is the funniest fucking thing they've ever seen, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And no one else would think of it but them two. But because they spend so many hours together, they're just trying to get creative with ways to make each other smile.
Yeah. You know, before I picked up an instrument, before I knew I wanted to do this, I'd seen Help when I was a kid, and just all these guys living in the same house and just always being together and just constantly just fucking off, kind of, you know what I mean? And taking a piss on everything, each other, the situation they're in, everyone around them, and just like kind of being in this bubble, like as a kid, that was so appealing to me. And then when I made the decision to do this thing, I was like 13 and I was at a Cheap Trick show. And there was a point where Robin Zander and Rick Nielsen, the guitar player, like looked at each other and just started laughing. And I was like, okay, this is, I got to do this. Cause the chicks love
it's
them.
So fun.
And they're laughing at something that I have no idea what it is. I want to be standing on stage with my best friend laughing at something. And everyone's like, what are they laughing at? You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
I also love music.
It feels nice to have. Yeah. Same.
Just in general, that whole aspect of music is nice. The music part.
Yeah. What were you going
to
say?
It feels nice to hear somebody. It's nice to have somebody else admit out loud that they vacillated back and forth between giggling and just openly weeping while they watched the 27 hours of Beatles footage.
Well, I'm waiting. I heard there's an 18-hour cut coming, and I'm like, I'm getting ready for it.
Give it to me.
Yeah.
Give it to me.
Give me all 50 hours, whatever it is.
Man, when they, I don't know why it was. Actually, I do know this one thing. This is a side story about that documentary that I didn't know. I had never heard the song Teddy Boy before. And I just didn't know that tune. And I'm watching it getting slow drunk by myself at like 2 a.m. the morning of my good friend in town who played, Kyle and I's good friend, Jonathan Oliphant, who played keys all over the last few records of ours. And his son was born a few days ago, and we got the news that his wife Olivia was in labor, and their son is named Theodore. And so I get this really beautiful endorphin serotonin dump, just this incredible ecstatic moment of joy for them. And later on that day, I find myself alone in my TV room, up late drinking, watching this Beatles documentary, and Teddy Boy comes on, and I just lose it. Like, wow. Complete, full-blown weep, like, pausing.
Yeah.
Head in hands, yeah. Like, shake weeping, because I'm so grateful, and there's, like, too much good that I can't process.
Yeah.
And I found myself, like, not even needing the emotional rush of having my kid, my buddy's kid being born, and just doing that over and over and over again as I watched history being made. I still can't believe that footage even fucking exists, let alone that we get to watch it.
Yeah. I heard that Teddy Boy, I think that was one of those songs that, like, they... Wasn't that one of the songs that they weren't... There was that thing where, like when George presents I Me Mine, and they all just kind of pretend that no one's playing a song. They're all just kind of like...
Oh, that is so heartbreaking. Yeah. It's so heartbreaking.
Is Jesus.
Yeah, but I think they all had a song like that of each other's. Like, the constant making fun of Oblah Di Oblah Da and Bang Bang Maxwell Silver and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God. I think I'd read the... Or maybe they said it in the documentary that I think that was all Maxwell Silverhammer was their least favorite song of all time.
Was John's. Ever recorded. Yeah.
It was John's.
Yeah. It's one of my least favorite. I think it's stupid. There's one thing about it that I really like, and that's the Moog in it. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
You don't like the anvil? Who can, how could you not like the anvil?
I had a bootleg copy of Let It Be in the 90s. And I used to just revel in how excited Mal Evans was that he could hit an anvil in time. Like, his face, it's almost like it's
absolutely.
Yeah. It's like, it's almost like he won some kind of thing. Like, ding, ding. Like, guys, I did it. Like, he's so happy.
Yeah.
And I was so glad.
If I was in his shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would probably have the same face. I would probably, if I got to play the anvil for the Beatles, I think I would be crying during it. I would just be like soft weeping while I'm playing in this fast song that I just got to be part of the Beatles for a second.
I got the sense that Mal was the only one in that room that understood maybe the gravity of what was happening in real time. That he was having the time of his life.
Yeah.
And it was just like Shangri-La to the nth degree for him the whole time. And he was, I love watching his face because you get this sense of how grateful he is for just music.
Yeah.
And he was such a pleasure to look at. Like, when he's there transcribing and offering lyric suggestions for Long and Winding Road to Paul, I was
what
like,
about
Jesus
that?
Christ.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I was just so beside myself. I was like, this fucker gets to do this. And I am so jealous and yet so happy for him.
Yeah. I like that they have a guy sitting there writing down every word they want to say and everything, but they don't have a fucking tuner or anything. That whole, like, give me an E thing was weird. Give me an E.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys have a Mal? Do you guys have, like, a guy that is part of the team that rolls with you guys?
We have a tour manager,
but
we don't have... I would say that for the first few records, we definitely had a Mal, and it was a buddy of Kyle's. Kyle, you can talk about Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy who's produced most of our stuff up until recently, we just started producing our own, was a buddy I went to elementary school through high school, college with, named Chris Jacoby, who's just an absolute musical genius and a... like dear friend, very close with. So it was always fun to get to go and work with him on stuff as well, because he had our 100% trust while we were doing it. And it was just going and adding another person to make fun of / get made fun of by. And it was just anytime we'd get to record, it was just such a sweet time, just because it was everything that I love, hanging out with friends and trying to make things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where it's at.
But he's who we worked out with mainly up until recently. And then this album kind of just did it, me and Andy. We had a lot of friends who we collaborated with, though. So I don't think there was one single Mel.
Did you guys mix it as well?
No, we didn't mix it. We had Chris Bethane mix and master it for us.
Who is that?
he's a good friend of ours here in Florence. And when I needed to cut vocals, he had a studio downtown in Florence I got to go to and do some of the vocals from there, just me and him in a room. And then we would literally FaceTime Kyle right after we sent a take and swap notes back and forth. It was basically like Kyle was in the room. But Chris is a genius. We love him to death. And I feel like we've got so many Chris's in our lives that we've relied heavily upon.
Yeah.
Start calling them all by their last names.
We've done this. We've done this thing.
So do you guys...
We trust any Chris we come in contact with.
Do you guys have any idea of like a dream producer of a record? Or are you guys like, wow, we did this ourselves. This turned out really fucking good. Let's explore what else we could do with this.
Kyle?
I don't know anymore. I think that I would love a George Martin in the room, someone to like look over, like after we do stuff. I don't really understand his role at the Let It Be sessions in the Let It Be until afterwards.
He was real marginalized. There's also that really intense weird thing where John introduces him as their A&R guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the thing is people talked about it and I didn't ever realize, but it's a Glenn Johns record.
Yeah.
Yes, like, that's right.
I mean, he's the guy telling them what they should be doing.
Yeah.
And not, you know.
It just seemed like they had almost all the creative control on what was going on. At least from the documentary.
Yeah. Well,
he was around. I'm sure he added a ton of input.
He didn't on that record. He didn't, because when they did Abbey Road after that, his stipulation was, I won't go in and do this with you guys unless we go back and do it the old way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because he was like, this is madness. Because they had just done that whole thing. And he was like, that was a mess, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
But outside of that, there's... it's just so tough because so much of what I want in a producer is like, I just have to trust them now. And I, other than working with Chris, we haven't worked with anybody else.
Right.
At like a deep level. I know I really enjoy the work of Malay, who's worked with Frank Ocean, did some stuff with Lord. And he just seems like a really cool guy. He seems like a really gentle person.
Right.
But outside of that, I honestly don't know. I think I kind of had a ball doing it, just me and Andy.
Yeah.
That I haven't even thought about what I would want to do past that.
Well, you guys did a great job. I mean, I just wonder sometimes because I vacillate as an artist. I vacillate between the two. Like I do it, then I'll co-produce a record of mine with someone, and then I'll just flat out like, you do it.
Yeah.
What does this song mean to you? You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
It all depends on where I'm at, like in my control, confidence, and vision.
Sure.
Yeah.
Vision, absolutely. If there's not a clear vision for it, I totally understand being like, will you do this? Because I can't. I have no idea. I know it's something.
Right. You see a thread in these songs? Like, is this crazy? Yeah.
But yeah, we just had so much fun. And I think that we'll see. I don't know. Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Did we ever meet when you guys lived here? No.
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so.
Okay. All right.
Much to our sadness.
Your name. But
that's surprising. Austin's just so huge. Like the idea that we were making music a few years after Anais Mitchell like had already up and gone and had been there, but like there are so many pockets of things happening in that city, I feel like, around the time that we were making music, that it would have been so fucking impossible to know all the ins and outs of that industry. And again, like while we were living there, we didn't really feel a part of the music community as much because we didn't see ourselves as professionals.
Oh, right. Did you guys ever any of those, what Christina Shipley shows? What were they called? Because that's where I thought I might have seen you at one or been at a show that you guys played.
Christina Shipley.
Wait, did she do... I thought that
she
name was from...
Was she at C3?
Live Vibe. No?
I don't know if we
no,
did
No, I don't
or
think
not.
So.
All right. Well, then I'm just confused. But I knew your name when your publicist sent me the thing. I was like, oh, I know these guys, or I know who these guys are.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Now, that's Christina, still always surprising.
Yeah, it is. Christina Shipley's name sounds so familiar.
I know.
She used to put on a lot of shows, and for some reason, I thought I had heard about you guys from her because you're also the kind of band that she would like. Like the kind of music.
That's very sweet to hear.
And she's like a big David Ramirez follower and stuff.
Oh, that's how we know her name.
She's real tall and she's blonde.
Yes.
And pretty.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I don't think we ever played one of her shows, okay, but I do know who she is.
Yeah.
Through David. That's why the name is familiar.
Yeah. Well, guys, it's been great talking to you. People can find this EP's worth of singles, Need You, right now, wherever it is they stream and download music. And also, Ollie Ollie drops on the 21st of January.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add before we go? It's been great meeting you guys, man.
Yeah, you too.
We do a fair amount of things like this, and you can always tell, I mean, A, that we vibe with you really, really well, but it's a pleasure to talk to somebody who asks thoughtful questions, whose give a damn meter is high, and who clearly loves music the way that we love music. So
yeah,
it's been really just fun to chat with you.
Oh, great,
so thanks,
man.
For
thank you.
Us
likewise.
On.
Yeah. Well, good, man. Yeah. Well, maybe we can stay in touch, and I'll see if you guys ever come down and play next year. Do you have a show booked in Austin?
Yeah, we're playing at the Paramount.
Wow, that's fucking rad.
Yeah, man.
What's the date on that? Do you know?
I do.
I can look it up
right
and
now.
Talk about it later.
It's all good. It's right here on my
handy-dandy
phone.
I love playing that fucking place, man. It's such a treat.
I love
it. Yeah.
It's truly wonderful. We are playing at the Paramount on... where are you? There you are. We're playing on 4/29.
All right.
April 29th at the Paramount Theater.
Well, great. I wish you a ton of success with this record and on your tour, and have a great time in Europe.
Thanks, man. Yeah. We will.
Yeah. Nice meeting you guys. I hope I see you around.
Yeah, you too.
Nice meeting you, Jeff.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Call and tell them a fine joke.
Penny and Sparrow, find them wherever it is you stream and download your jams. Need You EP out now. Their album, Ollie Ollie, out January 21st, 2022. Get out there and find it's Penny and Sparrow. Really great what a great conversation. What cool dudes. I really enjoyed talking to them. Very, very cool dudes. And they met here at a UT. You never know how that's going to happen. You never know you're going to end up doing this sometimes. Some people set out like me. I was like, I knew exactly what I wanted it to look like. But these guys were just kind of like, oh, shit, man, this is awesome. And they're doing it, man. Great songwriters, great tunes. Penny and Sparrow, find them wherever it is that you stream and download your jams. And don't forget, gang, when you're out there checking out Penny and Sparrow, you can subscribe to this podcast on Spotify. If you're listening to Penny and Sparrow on Spotify, go to How Did I Get Here? Follow us. Give us a like. Click that little heart button. Follow us on Facebook. How Did I Get Here? You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Always posting. See pictures of people that are on the show. See old photos. Know when we're putting out a From the Vault episode. Know when we're dropping an episode. We're also everywhere you find podcasts. Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, Spotify, Stitcher, everywhere. Two new shows a week at least. All right? Have a great, great, great New Year's Eve. Happy, happy New Year to you. Happy 2022. All right? Let's make this one a good one. Have a great weekend, you guys. Stay safe. Let's get down.
This is mountaintop, hoping that you would be caught there with me. Damn it, I hope so. My head on line. If they end up calling roll, we could both stow away. Why not, babe?